British Prime Minister Tony Blair and his family met with Pope Benedict here in the Vatican this weekend, discussing the role that religion can play in politics and in British society. According to their press officers, the two leaders emphasised the importance of dialogue, especially with moderate Muslim voices in Britain, to promote peace and reduce the risk of terrorism. During the private meeting, they also talked about the challenges of globalisation and the need for the international community to support peace and development in Africa in particular. Despite speculation over whether or not the Prime Minister would officially invite Pope Benedict to Britain, there was no mention of a possible papal visit following the meeting on Saturday morning. Earlier this year, the bishops of England and Wales issued an invitation to the Pope, almost a quarter of a century after the landmark visit of John Paul II, the first pope to travel to Britain since the Reformation.
Quite natural that the bishops of England and Wales, and indeed the whole of the Catholic people in our countries, would want a visit from the Holy Father. We've had one 25 years ago, or nearly 25 years ago, from Pope John Paul. So naturally, I wanted, at least in terms of this invitation to Pope Benedict, for him to know how welcome he would be if he came to our country.
As Archbishop of Westminster, Cardinal Cormac Murphy O'Connor is head of the Bishops' Conference in England and Wales. On the eve of Prime Minister Blair's meeting with the Pope, I talked to him about prospects for a papal visit to Britain and about the issues the two leaders would most likely be discussing.
We had a response from the Holy Father through Cardinal Sardano that it would just not be possible in 2007 because his agenda is such that you just can't add on visit after visit. And I imagine, though I don't know, there must be lots of other bishops' conferences who've invited the Holy Father to visit them, so that I quite understand. Now, whether he'll come at a later date, well, that remains to be seen. Now, what the Prime Minister will say, I really don't know about that. Obviously, he'd be, I think, very keen. He's a very convinced Christian, married to a Catholic, as everybody knows, and a very practicing Christian. And so I think he would see the visit of the Pope to Britain as a way of someone with the prestige of the papal office stating things in the social, the moral sphere that need to be said in what is a very secularist society. I imagine Pope Benedict might well be asking Tony Blair, what is the situation regarding religion and politics in Britain and the political situation? And there are certain tensions there, tensions which are not easy but can be creative. How can you, as a Catholic, a politician, with the convictions that you have, particularly about social and moral issues, be part of a government whose views on certain of these would not be in accord with yours? So it's a question really, not only for politicians, it's also indeed for the Catholic Church generally. How do you be a beacon? How do you assert what you believe to be true in a secularist society, multicultural, and in a way where everybody's view is as good as anybody else's? And I think in some ways, Pope Benedict, when he talked about the dictatorship of relativism, was really getting at that. What are the common fundamental values for a civilized, a human society that must be treasured? And I think that's a very important issue.
Certainly, the Catholic Church in Britain is increasingly outspoken on many of these issues, moral and ethical issues. Do you think that the charges that one hears sometimes of interference in politics, is there any justification for that accusation?
Well, here's the charge. On the whole, I think it's not justified. That the Catholic Church does not play party politics. It doesn't favour one party over another, but it intervenes with the political process or the political debate on matters that are of concern to all politicians and to all people. And these things would be particularly concerned with the dignity of the human person and all that protects that, the primacy of the family in society, which is a debatable point in view of some of the legislation that's gone through Parliament. And the other thing is the desire of the Catholic Church to make sure, along with other Christians and indeed other faiths, that while it's true that in a secular society, religion is supposed to be neutral, there's a certain tendency to try and neutralize religion. Now, that's something we must fight with all our energy.
You mentioned the right to life issues, and recently there's been the case of the Joffe Bill still going through Parliament. The Church spoke out very clearly, very strongly, took very much the leadership of the churches, didn't it?
Yes, not only has it spoke out very strongly, but also, as it were, under the leadership of Archbishop Smith, of Archbishop Cardiff, actually rallied the Catholic people to write to their MPs, but also the members of the House of Lords who were debating this issue. And indeed, it was a happy cooperation with the Anglican bishops particularly. And it was a fiercely debated subject. And the Joffe Bill, in fact, was defeated. But it will come back again. This is not this business about assisted suicide, and that's what it is, in fact, the right to kill in the circumstances. It's not gone away. It will come back.
It is an issue which is often debated in a very emotional way. How can the Church perhaps, as you say, when it comes back to Parliament, you can encourage your Catholic people particularly to take action, writing to MPs and so on, but how to keep these issues very clearly in the forefront of people without falling prey to this emotional coverage that it so often gets?
You'll always get people who will, as it were, give cases that are indeed very sad, and I have great sympathy for people who suffer exceedingly. I do think that palliative care is something that's hugely important. And doctors who have worked for years in hospices, palliative care, say there is no need for such a bill. The kind of treatment that can be given in hospices is such that no one need feel unreasonable pain in that sense. And I think the cases that are put sometimes are put in a way that takes away from what I would call the reality of palliative care. And also, one doesn't always want to be the sort of werewolf, the slippery slope, but there's no doubt that certainly in Holland and one or two other countries, from being a very exceptional case, it now becomes more the norm that people have the right, as it were, to have themselves killed in certain circumstances. So I think there is a slippery slope argument as well. But I think you have to fight it on the fundamental value that our life is not deliberately to be taken away. And together with that is the possibility of proper palliative care, even for those who suffer enormously.
To the question of inter-religious relations in Britain. Now, you were talking recently in Oxford about the relationship, particularly between the Catholic Church and the Muslim community in Britain, and you had some strong words about Muslims who should be speaking up more strongly about religious repression or misuse of religion for violent means in other countries. What kind of reaction, I'm wondering, have you had from Muslims in Britain to those words?
Not negative at all in Britain. In fact, some very positive reactions. They too feel that, for the most part, Muslims in Britain are accepted as part of our community, and the majority of them are good living people. And when I say to them, as I did in the lecture at Oxford, that they should be in the forefront rather than people like me in stating in the Muslim world, especially in those countries where there is not tolerance of Christians, even in a minor way, I said I would like, just as the Muslims can freely celebrate in London or in Oxford, that same would be true of Christians in Riyadh or Kabul. And the best arguments for this really would come from within the Islamic community. The other point I was making, in other words, I was thinking of reciprocity, if you like. The other point that I was making with regard to the Muslims and the Catholic Church is that their acceptance within British society comes gradually. It doesn't come all at once. They realise that the Catholic community over the past 150, 200 years has been such as to be gradually accepted again into with others, the heart of British society. But it's taken time. For many years, the Catholic community was on the periphery of British society. And they know this. And that's why they come to us and say, help us. we're in the same boat. And I've had a number of conversations with, sadly he died recently, Dr. Zaki Badawi, who was the leader of the Muslim community, about this very fact. So I think they have got a long way to go with regard to a proper absorption. I say proper absorption into British society. Maybe we can help them in this. And there are values which they have, which we would share in terms of respect for the individual and the family and things which I think are not unimportant.
You mentioned the death of Dr. Badawi. The question of leadership within the Muslim community is very difficult, isn't it? You don't really have a direct partner with whom perhaps you can discuss many of these issues.
No, they don't really like leaders, I think. I mean, every imam is a sort of, I suppose, a leader. At the moment, we're trying to unearth with them, you know, people who would be spokespersons for them. And there are very, obviously, very intelligent and cooperative Muslims. They are a bit reluctant to take a leading role for their own purposes, and I think that is one of the challenges we've got to face.
Would you sense a struggle within the Muslim communities in Britain between, if you like, the moderate Muslims who would share your kind of views and the harder line people who would be taking more directives from other Islamic countries?
That's very hard to know because they're still quite a closed community in many ways, and I would have thought that the vast majority of Muslim citizens are happy to be part of this country for all sorts of reasons. Their children are growing up here reasonably happily and would not be taking orders, where it comes from, Islamic countries. Of course, we're coming up to July the 7th, the anniversary of that terrible bombing, and it was a huge shock and surprise that those men who detonated those bombs were actually not from abroad. They were people brought up in Britain. So I think the way in which the Muslim community are going to be formed, educated, brought part of the citizenship in Britain is very, very important. I spoke to the Prime Minister some time ago, or he spoke to me about faith schools, and he was really talking about schools for Muslims, just as we have Catholic schools. And, well, it's very hard in a free society if Catholic schools have them, or Anglican, why can't you have Muslim? Yes, but the Muslim schools, if they do have them, there would have to be a degree of what I would call education in citizenship, which would be part of the curriculum, so that they wouldn't become separatist schools. So I do think it's a delicate matter.
You mentioned the anniversary of the July 7th attacks in London. Will you be commemorating that in any particular way? What would be your message for this occasion?
Well, my message would be one that was given so movingly after the July the 7th last year by a Catholic lady from Nigeria whose husband was a Muslim and lost their only son in the bombing, saying, "No more death, no more bombing, no more violence, we must forgive." So I think that would be the general tenor of this. This must never happen again. So the actual form of the commemoration, they're not being quite established yet, but there certainly will be.
My thanks there to Cardinal Cormac Murphy O'Connor, Archbishop of Westminster and head of the Bishops' Conference in England and Wales.